Succession number 30555, reel 1.
I know that you told me it's difficult to remember your early childhood, but I wonder whether you could recall for me, as well as you can, what sort of family life you had as a young child.
Well, I was exceptionally lucky with my family. We were a very close family. We had a very happy family life. Both father and mother spent a lot of time with us. We lived in quite an exciting, from a young person's point of view, background with university and schools, and there were a lot of friends, a lot of things happening.
What kind of job did your father do?
He taught law. The trouble was he did it rather well. So that he expected more of his eldest son than he was going to get out of him academically. He wrote books, had a very logical mind, was always pulling me up if my grammar wasn't correct or hadn't expressed myself clearly. He was keen on games. He led a very regular life. He believed in... He never worked exceptionally hard, but he worked very regularly and always kept his routine. And I think that helped me slowly understand the need for a certain discipline if you're going to work.
When you say that he expected more of you than you could provide academically, what do you mean?
Well, he did very well out of Oxford in his exams. I think he hoped and thought I should get a first. Didn't work hard enough, and I don't think I had the ability.
What about your mother? What sort of influence was she?
She was a big influence. She used to spend a lot of time with us. She was very warm. She'd pull us up if we needed pulling up. She came from a military family. All her brothers were in the Indian Army, or one was in the Black Watch. So she had that side to her. I just have the warm, happy memories. I feel I didn't really make the most of it. Not when I came to Oxford.
Oh, later on. But as a child, did you make the most of it?
I think so. Well, it's difficult telling one's own case. Yes, I did reasonably well at both my schools. Played a certain amount of sport.
Tell me about the first school that you went to in Oxford, the Dragon School.
Well, that was a large school, a well-known school. We lived at home and walked to school every day. The last year, I was sent as a boarder. I think that was a help. It got me accustomed to being on my own. I really liked it. I mean, there's a river there. I had a lot of friends. Some subjects I was very poor at, but yeah, I think it was a time that I learnt, and I came under good influences. I just think I was very fortunate.
How much did you enjoy Stowe?
I loved it. I mean, you had freedom, you had the fields, you could go and pick mushrooms and cook them in your study when you got a study. There wasn't too much competition. I mean, you know, you felt you weren't under too much pressure to get good results. You had nice masters. I mean, you made fun of some of them, and others pushed you around a bit more than you thought they should do, but it was very happy.
What sort of things did you enjoy when you were at school?
I enjoyed games. I enjoyed tennis. I enjoyed going out in the fields. I met people that came from a different background from me, had different experiences and skills, and it was a time when you were learning, you were gaining new experience of life. I can't remember anything I didn't really enjoy. I liked cross-country running. I don't know why I did, but I did.
So then you came up to Oxford, here at Merton College. Mm. What did you get out of being at university?
Well, I'm not sure. I at university I was under pressure because father had done so well. And, of course, when you come to university for the first time, you're on your own, you suddenly got independent. You're suddenly loose in a world where there's all sorts of things to explore. And I think probably that I was perhaps over-attracted by just the fun and enjoyment. And I bought myself a car, which I couldn't really afford, an Alfa Romeo. And that took my time and it took my money. So then I had a problem managing financially. I worked, but I didn't work as hard as I should have done. I stuck to playing games. I felt that you should play games. So I did reasonably well at tennis. I played rugger. That wasn't my game, but there were only 16 rugger players in Merton, so if one of them fell out, I had to fill in. Then, of course, you had to join one of the cadet corps, or you expected to, and I felt you should do. That was a turning point in my life, because I thought, well, I don't want just to be an infantryman. I want something different from the usual. So I decided on the cavalry. But then I found you had to turn up at 7 a.m. at a dreadful drill hall. You were shouted out by a sergeant major. I didn't know horses, nothing about horses. He made you run at the horse and jump onto it. He made you somersault backwards off it. And it was just horrible. So I thought I'll go to the other extreme and find the most comfortable way I can of serving. And that seemed to me to be the pilot. So I went to the Oxford Air Squadron and I just sort of took to that. I just sort of felt at home there. Then that began to take a lot of my time because I really enjoyed it. I wasn't particularly good, but I just enjoyed it. I liked the sound of the air because there were open cockpits in. I liked my instructor. He was a lovely man and a great character. I was brought in touch with, again, another generation that I didn't know, the serving Air Force. Made you feel a bit, you know, important. We used to go to flying camp, summer camp, at Ford, which is down in Sussex.
Your contemporaries seem to feel that you had a pretty good time when you were at university, that you were, you know, you had a slightly mad side. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think it's very fair. I did have a mad side.
What sort of thing? All right, we're running out.
Yes, that's fine.
Yeah. Turn over, please.
If you want, take one.
How important were particular friends to you as a young man?
Oh, they were very important. I mean, they're people that you look up to because they've done something and or they have qualities that you admire and you know them slightly. But there are other friends that you know closely and that you share things with. And again, I think that I was particularly fortunate in the friends I had both at Stowe and at Oxford.
Now, there was a coincidence in that several of your contemporaries also won VCs. Who were they?
Well, there was Jock Anderson at Stowe. He was one of my closest friends. We used to have a bath side by side, and when it was bath night, he was a rugby player. He was tough. He was strong. I admired him because he had, you know, strengths and abilities that I hadn't got. But yet he was very friendly. He got a posthumous VC in North Africa. Then here at Merton, my closest friend was Jack Randall. And that's true, he won a posthumous VC in Burma. It was a marvellous VC, I mean, his action that won it. And what always struck me is that it reflected precisely his life. I remember him playing rugby, and if he once got the ball, there might be three men on top of him, but he'd keep running. And that was virtually how he won his VC. He was at the end of a long action. He was charging a Japanese machine gun that was in a dugout on his flank so as to protect his troops. He just ran at it point blank over about 70 yards. And they said he was being hit as he went, but he just kept going. And when he got there, he threw a hand grenade into the slit and then threw his body over the entrance. That was just exactly as I remember Jack, I mean, in the, you know, the things of everyday life.
Scoring the ultimate try. Yeah.
So, I had many friends here. I had many friends in the air squadron. There's Chris Fox in Norris, I grew up with, who's been our chairman and helped me greatly ever since.
When you, when we were talking just now, we were talking about the, I can't remember what we were talking about, to tell the truth. Oh, I know, the degree ceremony, that's what I wanted to mention. You went through a ceremony of an honorary doctorate this morning, of being installed as an honorary doctorate. What did that ceremony mean to you? What does the doctorate mean to you?
Well, it means a great deal. I feel extremely honoured. I'm not sure that I really deserve it, but I feel very honoured. My father got a real doctorate. He was a doctor at common law. And I just remember the day that he received it. I remember being a very long ceremony. It was all in Latin. And Christopher and I were tremendously impressed by these scarlet robes he was wearing. Sort of made up for the length of the ceremony. I think I was also struck by... I don't know how to describe it, but it's a ceremonial occasion. There's a deep ceremony to it. But it doesn't feel out of place. And I think it's because it has its roots so far back in history. It's part of a tradition. And tradition's always interested me in life. I know that the day that I went to my first operational squadron in June 1940, I was a frightened man, you know. I was a worried man. How am I going to behave? I'm not used to being under gunfire. And I got inside the station, and everything, firstly, was completely normal, and nobody was acting any differently from I'd seen them on flying training school. And secondly, you felt, you could begin to feel that you were part of a tradition. You were, as it were, carried along. You realized that you weren't there just in your own right. You were occupying a place in the squadron that others in past years and in past battles and wars had occupied. You felt you owed them a duty. You felt that they were, that tradition was lifting you. And wherever you find human society, you find that society builds up its own particular tradition. I find it very meaningful. I think if there's one thing that summed up today, it was tradition.
Good. Just one thing which we've rascated over. We talked briefly about your mother and father earlier on. We mentioned your brother, but how close were you to your brother?
I was very close. We had odd arguments, but they didn't last. We complimented each other. I mean, he did qualities that I... You know, we got on well together. He was my younger brother.
Yes, sorry.
Somebody whistling, and it's very awkward.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
He's walking around.
Running there. 82, take one. How close were you to your brother?
We were very close, I think. Well, we had little arguments, but they never meant much. We had happy times together. We sort of liked more or less the same things. I think we complimented one the other. He was my younger brother, so I felt a bit protective towards him. When he joined the Air Force and was posted to heavy bombers to Halifax, I thought that was all wrong. I thought, Christopher can't... He should never have been asked to... Sorry.
You saw me looking. God, please.
83, take one.
You were just beginning to tell me about when you joined the Air Force and your brother also joined, and you felt responsible for him. You said you felt a bit protective towards him.
Yeah, I felt protective towards Christopher. I was his older brother. I thought that, and I thought it was all wrong he should be asked to fly. He was much too young, and I was learning that that there were so many young people. There were 17, 18 that were taking off Halifaxes. But I felt protective towards him throughout the war. He was shot down on a POW. Sorry, my thoughts aren't very...
That's all right. No, that's okay. I wanted also to ask you about, as a young man, as a very young man, before you ever joined the Air Force, anyway, what kind of ambitions and aims did you have?
I think I wanted a job that was going to give me excitement, a lot of money, and the minimum of work. I was looking for excitement. I mean, I suppose everybody's really looking for excitement in one form or another. Thing is, we've been over that, I'm not sure.
No, we haven't. We haven't. We've talked about excitement, but we haven't talked about... why did you want a lot of money? What was so exciting about money?
I was short of money, you see, so... I didn't think very deeply about life and the future. And I don't think that I was... It was a realistic world I was growing up in. I mean, war was coming. And maybe we didn't know it. Well, we did know it from 1938 onwards. It's very difficult in that kind of background to be realistic about your own future. Father taking it for granted that I would go into the law. The family had always gone... His father's side had always gone into law. So he expected that, but that didn't appeal to me. And
how did you see yourself in your own imagination? Were you going to be a pilot? Were you going to be something exciting, as you said?
From the moment I joined the Air Force in 1938, so I wasn't to be... That didn't take effect until after my exams a year later. Yes, I was going to be a pilot. But the thing is...
Before then, though, anything exciting would have done, would it? Racing driver, Arctic explorer?
No, I think that I was thinking things out in my mind. But had it come to the reality, I'd have known that wasn't what I wanted. It's one thing to sit in the abstract and think what you want. And you have all sorts of hopes and, you know, fancies. But faced with the reality is a different thing altogether. I think I found that throughout my life, that you can think yourself into a position... that you decide that's what I want or that's my position. But when you're faced with the actual concrete circumstance, whatever it is, you think completely differently. And I think it's very... that if you talk about danger and facing danger or facing a difficult situation, it's better not to think about it. Because when you get there, you'll find that it's different from what you've imagined and you'll find that your reaction is different. I know that what applies to one person doesn't apply to another, but I've found that a good principle is if there's something to be done and if it involves danger, get into it and then worry about how to get out of it once you're in, because you've got an instinct for survival that's going to come to your rescue. Your mind's going to be on the job you're doing, but if you hang around short of the time...
What a pity.